Sport Berkey is small enough to store in your glove box, so it's ideal backup for unexpected emergencies like blackouts, floods, or earthquakes. It's simply the best personal water filtration system available. So effective you could drink raw, untreated water from lakes, rivers, and streams. Unlike other sport bottles, the Sport Berkey's patented filter formulation is so powerful it removes cysts, parasites, harmful bacteria, and chemicals like herbicides and pesticides. It even reduces radon 222, lead, and other heavy metals. This lightweight, rugged 22-ounce filter is small enough to go everywhere, so take one to work and keep another in your glove box for emergencies. Get the Berkey Sport for only $39. Get two for $70.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you of the views that are expressed here, and not necessarily those with the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and, well, they will be the views for this next hour of Thomas Woods. Thomas, are you there?
Yes, I am, Dr. Stan.
Well, I really appreciate you being with us. Of course, we've had Thomas with us before on a number of occasions. He wrote a book, I remember, on the politically incorrect view of American history and a number of other books. But he's recently written a book on meltdown, talking about the financial meltdown, but really giving you an understanding of why we have the problem. And, of course, you're with the Von Mises Institute?
Yes, sir.
All right, fine. Well, why, then, are we having the problem and what needs to be done?
Well, my view of what the problem is more or less the exact opposite of what you get in the mainstream media, which is why I decided I'd write a book about it, because I had this fantasy one day. I thought, wouldn't it be funny if we could get what I think to be the correct view of this out before the bad guys even have time to organize themselves? And it seems to me that what's happening is that the Federal Reserve System, which I think is at the heart of our problems, is predictably enough being portrayed as the great savior that's going to direct us out of it through its wise scientific planning. But I'm suggesting in Meltdown that the Federal Reserve System is not the savior. It's not the solution to our problems. It is the problem. That if it had not been for the Federal Reserve System, there would not and could not have been a housing bubble to burst in the first place. There wouldn't have been this crazy, obviously unsustainable, phony prosperity of the past, at least 7 years. We would have had a normal, sound, healthy economy. But instead, we've had an economy that, you know, I refer to the Fed chairman now as our Soviet commissar in charge of money and interest rates. We've had an economy that's been basically manipulated by a Federal Reserve System that is not part of the free market. It's created by the government, imposed on us against our will, has nothing to do with capitalism at all, and that according to the great free market economists like Mises and Hayek, the source of the business cycle, the reason the economy seems to go on these ups and downs all the time, is not that, as Karl Marx would have it, the free market just naturally goes up and down, but instead that you get a central bank like the Fed that thinks there's a shortcut to prosperity. You can just print a lot of money out of thin air, or you can force interest rates lower than the market wants to set them, and voila, you've got prosperity. But if it were really that easy, then Bangladesh would be doing it. They'd just build a Federal Reserve, lower their interest rates, and they'd have no more poverty. It is a scam. It's a central planning scam. And to add insult to injury, we're now being told that Alan Greenspan's problem was that he believed in the free market too much. I mean, are we to be spared nothing here? I mean, it's just unbelievable the nonsense they try to put over on us. So the purpose of Meltdown, then, is to, in effect, argue that the people who are the experts, who are the ones who are going to get us out of this, are actually the ones who got us into it, and who really should be studiously ignored in favor of those relative handful of people who actually predicted the crisis. And I include in that Ron Paul, who wrote the book's foreword.
All right, fine. Of course, it's a really a fascinating book. And of course, what we really stress is what we need is more saving and more production, not more spending and consumption. And yet, that is, of course, what the people on the other side are saying. Oh my goodness, we just get the markets going again. People start borrowing money and spending money, and then of course everything would be fine. And that's what got us into this hole. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment or two with Thomas Woods, and we're going to be talking about his book, Meltdown, which is, as you read it through, it's just all so logical, it's so self-evident, and yet nobody ever says it. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Thomas Woods, who's with the Von Mises Institute, who's written a wonderful book called Meltdown, and we're going to be carrying the book. And basically, it just goes into the background of the financial problems we're facing today. And, of course, these problems did not come about because we didn't have enough regulation. There were plenty of regulations out there. It was simply that they refused to enforce any of those regulations. What you need is a free market, and they will not allow a free market. It was the Fed that actually produced the first stock market bubble, then they create the housing bubble, and when Alan Greenspan kept the interest rates at 1% for a year and allowed a massive expansion of borrowing and drove the prices of houses up and was encouraging the use of derivatives and all sorts of, they call it constructive housing, lending plans, you know, mortgage plans. It was really predatory lending, nothing down, nothing for a year, or, you know, adjustable rate mortgages or liar's loans or really, in fact, I know one fellow actually got $25,000 to buy a house. All he had to do was sign up and he got $25,000 in the house. That's pretty good. Nothing down, nothing to lose, and turns around and sells it a few months later and makes another $50,000. But this was obviously a housing bubble, and it was created by the central bank. But you pick up the story there, Thomas.
Sure. Well, let's try to imagine what would have happened if we hadn't had a government-established central bank. Because, I mean, the Federal Reserve, for listeners, and I know that your listeners tend to be, and I'm not just flattering people, but are more educated on this stuff than the average American who doesn't know a thing about it. But even still, a lot of people, when they hear central bank or the Fed, they don't really know what this thing is. The Federal Reserve System, to make a long story short, has the government monopoly privilege of being able to create legal tender money out of thin air. And so let's suppose we didn't have an institution like that. And let's suppose that somehow there was a housing bubble getting started. The people were just madly buying houses. Well, without a Fed, what would have happened is that the banks would have, you know, naturally run out of funds to lend for all these houses. And so interest rates would have shot up, and that would have been the end of it. There would have been no further speculation in real estate. But if you have a government monopoly central bank that can just create money out of thin air, well, they can create all this money and give it to the banks, and now the banks have a whole lot to lend again. They can keep this process going until it reaches these totally unhealthy, unsustainable levels. And meanwhile, the dramatically high housing prices that it gives rise to make consumers think they're richer than they really are.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this afternoon is Thomas Woods with the Von Mises Institute, which is dedicated really to free market economics as laid out by Ludwig von Mises, the father of Austrian School of Economics, and by Friedrich Hayek and a few other people who really said what we need is a free society, not a controlled society. People don't understand. We have a central bank that directs our economy, just like Karl Marx advocated in the Communist Manifesto, but we can't let the common people understand that it's not we have, you know, too much government regulation. We've got too much government interference in the economy, where you have a central bank that can just keep churning out credit. Now, this is not paper money. This is credit. And they actually created this stock market bubble, and then they allowed the banks to take all these fraudulent mortgages, which were doomed to actually collapse. They knew they were going to be defaulted. There was no way they could have not known that when you sell a house to a person who can't possibly afford it with nothing down and nothing for 3 months or 6 months or 3 years, why, sooner or later this is going to default. And so what happened is that they sold these bonds all over the world, and they've not only destroyed our economy, they've destroyed the economy of the entire world by creating this housing bubble in America, which has metastasized all over the world. At the present time, it's estimated that as much as 45% of the wealth of the entire world has been destroyed in the crisis so far, and we're a long way from the bottom. And so you pick up the story there, Thomas, because you know the story far better than I do.
Well, but you know the story far better than any of the so-called experts. And this is the problem, is that here we've had a disaster of just titanic proportions, and yet we're still being told, you know, that we should look superstitiously to Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke or whoever the experts are to lead us out of this, when everything Ben Bernanke has said over the years has been dead wrong. But yet, I'm happy to say, although it's not nearly enough people, there is nevertheless a vocal, dedicated minority of the population that is waking up to the problems and the instability introduced by the Federal Reserve System. Because the very fact that Bernanke, did you see this like a month ago, he went on 60 Minutes? I mean, when was the last time a sitting Fed chairman felt he had to go on 60 Minutes to defend himself? And, of course, naturally, the journalist interviewing him doesn't bother to ask any good questions. You know, it's all things like, you know, what was your favorite color? You know, what's the hardest part of being the Fed chairman? I mean, just stupid softball.
Well, let's see the home you were born in. Let's go to your home neighborhood.
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing about
it's
how
like
he's...
These journalists are all graduate from what I call the Pravda School of Journalism. You know, you always make the rulers look wise and indispensable. But we've got that, the fact that he feels he has to do this. We have the fact that Ron Paul's bill to audit the Fed, which when he introduced it last year, got 2 co-sponsors. Now he's got more than 110. I mean, something is going on in this country. And then we have the fact that, if I may point out, that Meltdown spent 10 weeks as a New York Times bestseller. And the whole thing, from beginning to end, is just a demolition of the Fed and all its claims that it's a source of stability. You know, don't make me laugh. And then later this year, Ron Paul himself has a book coming out called End the Fed. I mean, I'm telling you, the opinion molders do not want us talking about this subject, and yet now the genie is so far out of the bottle, the toothpaste is not going back into this tube.
I certainly hope not, because unless the people understand what they've done and how they've done it, why, we're going to lose this nation, because, of course, what they're doing is monetizing debt. They're creating ever more money, exactly as they did in Zimbabwe, as they did in the Weimar Republic. And you can't keep doing this without destroying the foundation of our monetary system. And you destroy the foundation of the monetary system, you destroy the nation. I don't think people really understand that, Thomas.
And I think a lot of people have been intimidated by all the lingo associated with the Fed. They feel like, well, I can never understand this. This is too technical for me. That is not true. That's a big mistake. Frankly, that's what they want you to think. You can understand this, but more importantly, right now, you've got to understand it, to know what's going on, and to be able to organize to fight against this. I have a website, tomwoods.com. I've got a free chapter of the book and a lot of articles there that help people show that this is, again, this is not brain surgery, even though they try to make it seem that this way. But once you learn this stuff, once you understand about the Fed and how it works and how it manipulates our economy, you can never unlearn it. You'll always have it in your head. And so you have to be prepared to live with the fact that once you learn this stuff, you're going to realize the people running the show either have no idea what they're doing. There are only 2 possibilities. Either they're totally clueless, or they're unbelievably sinister. I don't see that there's a third possibility.
No, I certainly wouldn't disagree with that. I think the important thing about your book and what I loved about it is you've taken a very a subject that they've made appear very complex. You've made it very, very simple so I could read this and understand why everything they're doing is wrong. And as you point out, if they just leave things alone, we would have a recession and we might even have a depression. But eventually, in a relatively short period of time, we'd be coming out of it, probably 6 months to a year. Instead, we've been in this thing really for at least 6 months now, probably much longer than that, and there's no end in sight, and everything they do simply makes things worse. Would you sort of develop that idea? Because I think this is so vitally important. How would the market correct itself if Timothy Geithner and Ben Bernanke simply would take their hands off of it President Obama wasn't pumping so much money into the society? And of course we have our TARP legislation, then we have our stimulus bill, and then we have a $3.4 or $3.6 trillion budget. I mean that's almost as much money as all the rest of the countries in the world spend, you know, together. And I mean, it's amazing the amount of money that they're putting out. It's like money's going out of style, and maybe it is.
Well, I think so. Well, given that we may be in for a barter future, maybe it is going out of style. But I mean, when you consider that if the deficit is like $1.8 trillion, well, that was the whole budget a few years ago. The whole budget was $1.8 trillion. So it is absolutely, like, we've never seen anything on this scale. It's absolutely shocking. And it is worth noting that in American history, when we had a depression most Americans have never even heard of, a really bad one in 1920-21, we got out of it not by fiscal stimulus and all this monetary nonsense. We got out of it by letting the market adjust. And, in fact, they cut the federal budget by 50% between 1920 and 1922. That's the opposite of what we're told to do today. Oh, you can never cut the government budget during a depression. Well, they cut it in half, and the result was a swift and robust recovery. But every time you do all this tinkering, like what Japan did in the 20s or what Japan did in the 90s, where they pretty much did just about everything Bush and Obama are urging on us and doing, well, their depression just went on and on and on and on and on with no end in sight. I mean, again, this is not brain surgery, but they're making it seem like it is. So my rule of thumb is whatever they recommend, I'm pretty sure the exact opposite is probably what should be done.
Well, how does the economy correct itself? I mean, this is the important thing for people to understand. And this is what Adam Smith wrote about with the invisible hand.
Right.
How does the economy correct itself?
Well, in this case, you would simply say that firms that have made dramatic mistakes and they've lost money, well, they need to go into bankruptcy. They need to have some of their assets sold off. They need new leadership. They need to be reorganized. They need to have their debts rescheduled. And then they can start up again on a firm foundation. And people who are competent get control of their assets. People who are incompetent lose control of their assets. That's how a free market economy works. So the people who make losses, they lose control of their capital. People who do well get control of more capital. And this is how our resources get channeled to the most efficient value-productive uses in society. And this can be a swift, perhaps somewhat painful, but a swift process all the same, if you just allow it to take place. But instead, we've done the opposite. We prop up every bozo, every disaster on earth, every quack, you know, gets a bailout. And so meanwhile, all the sound firms that stayed out of this craziness, they figured, well, you know, when it all goes bust, we'll get market share. But they're not being allowed to because their competitors are being propped up. So that's the opposite of the type of recovery we need.
But after all, if we did this, wouldn't there be an awful lot of people losing their jobs?
Well, yes and no. Because, for example, imagine the car companies. People say, well, if the car companies didn't get a bailout, everybody would lose his job. But my answer to that is, given the fact that GM is losing, I read, $4,000 per car, well, obviously GM can't do that forever, and there's no way we could subsidize that forever. So in my view, the only way you can preserve American jobs in manufacturing cars is for them to go into bankruptcy so that they can get a new business model, they can get new leadership, they can start again not under the burden of all these terrible contracts they can't possibly satisfy. In other words, there's no way under their current business model they can survive. So only with the pressures that bankruptcy would bring is there any hope that people could in the long run keep their jobs in these industries.
I think that is really such an excellent answer, because it's obvious that since this whole recession began in about December of 2007, 5 million people have lost their jobs, and because of the government interference. If we just let the thing go through a normal cycle, it'd be over now. 5 million people have lost their jobs. 600,000 people are losing their jobs every month, and there's no end in sight. That's the amazing thing. Faced with a failing situation, they keep doing more of the same.
That's absolutely right. And in fact, the statistics may even be worse, because we have also the fact that hundreds of thousands of people every month we find are going into part-time work. And most of these, it's not because they prefer part-time work. That's all they've got. So it's even worse than the government statistics suggest.
I know. But of course, they're not going to. They want to tell us just trust in the government and everything's going to be fine. Well, ladies and gentlemen, of course, we have the greatest deficits that our nation has ever seen. In fact, we have the greatest deficits that the world has ever seen. And there's simply no way to pay off not only the money that they will admit that we owe, which is about $11.5 trillion right now, but it's really somewhere between 55 and 60 trillion if you look at our future requirements, and no possible way to pay it off. What's going to happen? Well, I think we're in for some very difficult times. That's why the message of Meltdown is so vitally important. This is an excellent book. Well, Thomas, you go right ahead with the description of certainly of what free market economics is really all about.
Well, people hear the free market or capitalism, and they're taught to think of boogeymen and the little monopoly man on the box cover with bags of cash with dollar signs on them. We're all sort of taught to think the worst, but all it means, all the free market is just an array of voluntary exchanges between individuals. That's all it is. That I've got some money, you've got a newspaper, I'd rather have the newspaper than my quarter, and you'd rather have my quarter than the newspaper. And so we have a mutually beneficial exchange. That's it. That's all it is. It just means that you are allowed to enter into any contract you want with your private property, as long as you don't cause physical harm to the person or property of anyone else. That's what free market is. It's just all these exchanges combined yields the free market. It just simply means nobody is allowed to use violence, to initiate violence in the economic sphere. That's it. But we're taught that this is the worst thing imaginable. We need a paternal government running things and so on and so forth. Well, there are a million reasons that that's bad and wrong. But just on a purely utilitarian point of view, the wealthiest societies on Earth are the market ones. And the places on Earth where the poor are doing the best, where the poor's condition is the least wretched, are in the market societies. I mean, where would you rather be poor? In Singapore or the United States? Or would you rather be poor in Bangladesh or Zimbabwe?
Oh, I agree with you totally. And because the whole idea is that they don't teach this in schools. They teach in our universities. And of course, I know you've had experience in academia, but certainly what they're teaching our children, what they're teaching our students in colleges today, is all about Keynesian economics and how the government is going to solve the problem. I don't think the government can solve the problem. I think the government is the problem.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I wrote an article called Tooth Fairy Economics about why the stimulus can't possibly make things better. But that's based on Keynesian economics, and that's also at TomWoods.com called Tooth Fairy Economics. Because that really is what it is, because it's the idea that, well, we'll just conjure up $800 billion and spend it. Well, where does that $800 billion come from? That's why I call it Tooth Fairy Economics. No one ever answers that question. If we could conjure up $800 billion, well, we should do that all the time. It's the basis of this stuff, that we can spend our way back into prosperity or we can print our way back into prosperity. This is really a deeply infantile way of looking at the economy, whereas today what we need is not these childish, juvenile policies of spending and printing your way to wealth. You have to understand that wealth comes only through hard work, through saving, through production, through entrepreneurial skill. There's no shortcut to that. And certainly no government. I mean, all the government does is seize resources and consume them. It doesn't produce anything. It doesn't have any real stuff. So it can't contribute to our prosperity. But this common sense point of view that I've just put forth, you're right, is hardly anywhere to be found within, certainly in high schools and colleges. You can find some dissenters within some economics departments here and there. But by and large, Keynes still rules even now, even after all the theoretical work that's been done against him. This bozo kind of type of economics still lives because it's what governments want to hear. Governments don't want to hear that, hey, you shouldn't be spending so much, and just printing money out of thin air is only going to make things worse. They don't want to hear that. They want to hear they are the great overlords who will steer our ship of state through this terrible crisis. I mean, they like being flattered. They like being told that increasing their power is, incidentally, just
hold
what
that,
the economy
hold
needs.
That.
Of course they're going to like this. The embarrassing thing is how many shills in economics departments will go along with it.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Thomas Woods, and simply talking about how all of the things we're being told by our leaders are wrong. We cannot simply spend our way out of this. In fact, they're not even going to tax us. They're going to increase spending and cut taxes, except on the very, very wealthy. But that's not going to come up with anywhere near enough money to solve the problem. And you can't increase spending and cut taxes. And this is not just a little increase in spending. I mean, they've already come up with the TARP legislation. That was $700 billion. And then we have the stimulus bill, and that was $787 billion, something like that. And then of course there's another couple of $3 or $4 trillion. We don't even know where that came from. We don't even know where it's been spent. Even the congressional oversight panel that's supposed to track this can't figure out what they've done with the money, because Ben Bernanke won't tell anybody. I mean, $2 billion has just disappeared. He assures us it's being used for good purpose, but he won't tell anybody because it might embarrass the people who borrowed the money, but he won't tell us who's borrowed the money. How could he get away with that? I mean, after all, Congress has a right to know, the American people have a right to know what he's done with $2 billion he's created out of nothing, or do we have a right to know?
Well, it's ambiguous, because on the one hand, you can find provisions of the various amendments to the Federal Reserve Act that indicate that the Congress has the power to audit the Fed. But they've amended that so that it now reads it has the power to audit the Fed, as Ron Paul puts it, except in the areas of A, B, C, and D, and A, B, C, and D add up to everything. So they've basically written this clause out. And so as of now, without H.R. 1207, which everyone should be insisting that his congressman support, H.R. 1207 to audit the Fed, without that, no, we've got one guy, Ben Bernanke, who, you know, it's bad enough that the Congress is debating $800 billion in stimulus, but this guy can create $2 trillion, you know, on a good afternoon, and he doesn't have to tell anybody where it went. And, in fact, even Bloomberg, which is a totally mainstream business news network, they're actually suing, I don't know what the state of this case is right now, but they're suing the Fed in the courts, demanding this information. And I don't know if they have a legal leg to stand on, but at least it's a good thing they're trying. So sure, I mean, even if people don't accept the economic arguments that in Meltdown that I make against the Fed, surely we can all agree, just from a point of view of common sense, that it can't possibly be a good thing for one guy to have the monopoly power to do this and then not even have to tell us anything about where the trillions he's creating out of thin air are going. I mean, do you think there's a slight possibility, just a teensy-weensy chance of abuse here in a situation like this?
Well, only if you have a suspicious mind.
Yeah, right. But here I am. It's my cynical nature getting the
right.
better of me.
Well, I think with $2 trillion, I mean, as somebody once said, $1 trillion here, $1 trillion there. Pretty soon you're talking about worthless money.
Yeah,
that's just exactly where we are headed as a nation. And the average individual out there really doesn't understand, Thomas. We're talking about the destruction of their pension funds, their life savings, their insurance policy, their annuities, their Social Security, their Medicare. All of this is going to be destroyed if they continue debauching our currency.
And, you could easily see them getting to a situation years from now where they start raiding people's pension funds and retirement accounts because they're going to need the money. I mean, it could really get seriously ugly. And so I'm also encouraged, even though they were on a small scale, but this year we've seen rallies all over the country, End the Fed rallies. There's a group, I have no connection to them, but I support them, called End the Fed. You can just visit them, endthefed.us. And, I mean, I never thought I would live to see people protesting outside the Federal Reserve banks across the country with signs saying, end the Fed, audit the Fed, because the Fed is supposed to be this institution that, you know, we peons aren't even supposed to, you know, care about. We're supposed to trust that the experts are running this thing for us. The fact that we're criticizing this thing, that we're criticizing it on intelligent, constitutional, and economic grounds is just absolutely the most, I think, the most unexpected, unpredictable political development of the last 24 months.
Well, I can only hope and pray that as things get worse, and they are going to get worse down the line, why, of course, that people will begin looking at what's going on and begin to challenge it and begin to study, and then they'll join us, because I know you're working to try to educate them, and I'm trying to educate them. But if we do not take back control of our country and get rid of the Fed and get back to a solid currency that they cannot simply expand or double or triple any time they want to, that we're going to lose this country. There is no instance in all history where a nation had gone under a fiat money system where that nation has survived. And it's been tried time and time and time again. This is nothing new. This is like deja vu all over again, leading to a nightmare. We'll be back in just a moment with our special guest, Thomas Wood, his book, Network, and we have it on hand. We hope you're going to want to get it. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I'll have to admit I do enjoy playing that song and getting a chance to listen to it. We don't hear that very often on the major news channels or the major music channels anymore. It's almost as if maybe they don't want people to really have that intense loyalty to America, which once was sort of the trademark of our society. Well, Thomas, certainly, what would you suggest that people do today to try to protect themselves and to try to remedy the situation?
Yeah, that's the question I think I get most of all. What can I do as an individual? I mean, there are a lot of people who understand what went wrong. They understand how when the Fed gives us prosperity, it's never real prosperity. It's always what goes up must come down. And so they get it, but they want to know, well, okay, I understand how the whole economy works. What do I do as an individual? And this is tricky because right now they've really done it to us this time. I'm not a financial advisor, so anything I say should be taken with a grain of salt. But in my case, I would stay far away from the stock market for the time being. I don't buy it when people say we've reached a low there. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I'm certainly not confident enough that's the case that I'd jump back in now. I think now we have to be in wealth preservation mode rather than looking to make major gains. If we can just hold on to what we have in the midst of this storm, we should be pleased with ourselves. So, I mean, my minor advice would be you cannot go wrong in the long run holding some gold and silver. And one way you know that it's a good thing to buy gold and silver is that the CNBC Business Network tells you you don't need to go out and buy any. So then that means you know for sure you have to do it. So that's the first thing you can do. But also, just stay alert. I mean, listen to programs like this one, or go to YouTube and type in names of people who have been right. So type in Jim Grant and watch what he says. Type in Jim Rogers and watch what he says. He gives good investment advice. Type in Peter Schiff, S-C-H-I-F-F, and listen to him. Listen to people who actually predicted the crisis. The rest of them are charlatans.
Hold that thought right there.
Lose all your
money. Back in a minute. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I was simply asking Thomas what should be doing. He suggested he's not a business consultant, a financial consultant, but that you wouldn't be wrong of investing in gold and silver because CNBC tells you not to do it, so you know it's probably the right thing to do. And then, of course, he suggests you listen to the people on YouTube who've been right, people like Jim Rogers, Jim Grant, Peter Schiff. And although I think Peter Schiff has been absolutely right about what was going to happen, his investment advice has not been that good. I got a lot of people into the foreign investments. But I love to listen to Peter because he's a very, very clear thinker. And I think that, but it's so hard to tell what's going to happen because nothing goes in a logical sense. I think that in a logical world, he would have been 100% right. Investing in foreign stock markets, unfortunately, they were three steps ahead of us as always.
Well, I think with Schiff, I think his argument is that the real crash that he's predicted hasn't actually hit yet. I mean, we're just seeing the very beginnings of it. And that when the big crash comes and the dollar collapses, then his investment strategy will be vindicated. So if you're in for the long run, then, you know, you might still be in good shape. And people who have gotten in the last 6 months or so when foreign markets have done better have done okay. I mean, he did have a really bad year in 07 to 08, but he'd had like six or seven fantastic ones. So, but as I say, I mean, I hear people debate this back and forth, and it's not my area, but certainly holding real stuff, like, as I say, gold and silver has got to be a major part of your strategies.
And I really like Peter Schiff, and I think he's got a lot of great ideas, and I really do put a lot of credence in what he says. Well, anyway, of course, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question for Thomas Woods, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. His book is excellent. It's easy to read. It's easy to understand. It is so self-evident as you read that and you sit there and you ponder what he's written and you say, that's just so obvious. Why didn't I say that as well as he did? Because it's a great book. It's easy to read, and yet it got a tremendous amount of information. In fact, we tried to buy some copies to offer to our listeners. They told us it was out of print, but fortunately, Thomas told us to who to go to. Obviously, whether it was just accidental that they told us it was out of print or intentional, we'll never know. But we do have the book. We think it's an important important part of your armamentarium to understand what's going on. Again, our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you're out there listening across America, why, and you have a question for Thomas, why this is the time to ask it. Well, suddenly now we begin to see, you know, we have this new stimulus bill. They still have about $100 billion left over from the TARP funds. They don't quite know how to utilize that. We see a Chrysler going into receivership, but the government, instead of this being handled by the courts, why the government is intervening, and they're going to simply steal all the money that, the bondholders, the people, the stockholders had, and suddenly give the value to the unions that created the problem by making impossible demands so that there was no way that our automobile industry could compete with automobile industries throughout the world when these people are getting such fantastic salaries and retirement benefits, and yet they're going to be rewarded, and the stockholders and the bondholders, they're going to be simply, they're going to lose everything. How can the President of the United States do that? There is no justification for his interference in our Constitution.
No, it's true, but as I sometimes say, you know, waving the Constitution in front of these people is like waving a crucifix in front of Dracula. You know, I mean, this is the last thing they want to talk about. They haven't got a leg to stand on. And in fact, if you even ask some government bureaucrat, hey, you know, I'm just curious, you know, what constitutional clause are you referring to in your belief that the government even has the authority to do X, Y, or Z? And I mean, honestly, they turn white as a ghost. They don't expect this question. They have no idea how to answer it. They sort of will stand there, stumble around, and maybe mutter something about the general welfare and hope you go away. But yeah, this is, I mean, at this point, this is a train that's left the station. This horse has left the barn. I mean, when you come down to it, the Constitution is, you know, which Thomas Jefferson said, you know, if we're going to have a constitution, we've got to obey it according to the letter. That if we interpret it so broadly to allow the government to do just about anything, then we may as well have a blank piece of paper for a constitution, and that's being totally vindicated right around us. And the Republicans don't have much of a leg to stand on either here. I mean, for all the Tea Party stuff, and I'm glad to see people out there protesting, where were they 2 years ago? Where were they 1 year ago when the same atrocities were being done to our Constitution, and yet most of these people were totally mute? It's just become a partisan thing to them.
Yes, the people who actually voted for that TARP legislation on October 3rd of last year, I mean, here was $700 billion that they simply they voted to give to Mr. Henry Paulson, who came from Goldman Sachs, and
yep.
Of course he gave up a job that paid him $35 million a year to take a job for $180,000 a year. Gee, what an idealistic, dedicated patriot he must have been.
He's a servant of the people, Dr. Stan.
Right,
he's a
servant of the people, but it's amazing how he's enriched Goldman Sachs time after time, lending them $12.5 billion and then making sure they got another $12.5 billion from AIG, or the man that he put in charge of AIG and made sure that Goldman Sachs got that. And it almost appears that Goldman Sachs, in many ways, is running what's going on in Washington, D.C., and you wonder whether President Obama makes the decisions or the people surrounding Henry Paulson and this little clique make the major decisions for us. But whoever's making it, they're raping this country and impoverishing our children.
And isn't it amazing that it's so obvious that this guy was acting with the interests of Goldman Sachs in mind, and then when he appointed an assistant, Neil Kashkari, he appoints another former CEO of Goldman Sachs. So you would think, just for appearances, he wouldn't appoint somebody from Goldman Sachs. But he went ahead and did that anyway. And this is going on right before our eyes. And yet, in the media, you hardly... I don't know if anybody pointed this out. That doesn't it seem kind of funny that this whole program seems to benefit the firm this guy used to be with, and it seems to be shoveling money to all his friends? It's basically people like you and me pointing out the obvious. Whereas again, the Pravda journalists who run our media, you know, they're talking about some singer's hairstyle or something. This doesn't even come up. To me, this seems slightly interesting, right?
I'm afraid it is. I think it's one of the greatest transfers of wealth in all recorded history. And what they're doing is transferring the wealth of our children and our grandchildren to a small group of elitists who have a different worldview.
And for the most part, they're doing it right in broad daylight. I mean, you have to at least give them credit, except for Bernanke. You know, they're pretty blunt about what they're doing. We're going to take your money, and we're going to hand it to these fat cats. And I think some of them behind closed doors must get a real kick out of how easy it's been, how little resistance there is. I mean, this is the sort of thing that you might expect hundreds of thousands of people out in the streets protesting this. I mean, people being burned in effigy or something. And yet, unfortunately, we have total lethargy. We've got people who've been trained to believe in the government brainwashing centers where they were educated, that their government representatives are representatives of the common good, and they're just there to bring about what's best for everybody. And some of them actually buy into this, amazingly enough, while they're being robbed right in front of their own eyes, and they still believe it.
Well, I think we have too much bread. We have too much circuses. What we need, of course, is for them to take away the bread. And right now, of course, everybody is losing their job, has their unemployment insurance. Now they've extended it for another 20 weeks to 26 weeks, another 20 weeks on top of that. But what happens when, of course, we run out of bread, when we run out of the unemployment insurance? What happens? And down the line, the government's just not going to have the money. I don't think Congress is going to give them anything more than they've already had. They've already had almost $500 billion, probably much more than that. I should say, let's see, they've had almost $5 trillion, and then there's another. We don't know how many other trillions of dollars that they have out there that Ben Bernanke has created, but somewhere down the line, since we're having to borrow almost $3 billion a day just to pay our bills, foreign countries are going to say, we're not going to continue financing our deficits. And at that point, the whole house of cards comes tumbling down, and people could not believe that suddenly the federal government wouldn't have any money, but the only way they'll be able to create it is simply to go the way that the Weimar Republic did or the Zimbabwe did, and simply destroy the value of our currency by simply creating money out of nothing. That is my fear.
And I think that's an entirely plausible outcome. And the social consequences of this, political consequences, you can hardly calculate the social unrest that could occur. I mean, it would be absolutely disastrous, which is why now we are in one of the great watershed moments in the history of our republic. I mean, this is not even slightly an exaggeration. I mean, it is so important for Americans to understand what's going on and to organize and start fighting. I mean, everybody should be thinking to himself, I've got something I can contribute to this. Whether it's just educating my neighbor about something, or lending a book, or handing out or sending a link to a YouTube, or it could be donating to a good cause, whatever. It could be somebody who's a good public speaker. There are so much that needs to be done, and so many people we have out there with various talents, that now is the time. If you've ever been thinking, man, I wish there was something I could do, figure it out. Find what you can do. Or find people who are good at it, who are good at educating, and support them. But if we can't rise to the occasion at this moment, we may not get another chance. This is the moment.
I agree totally, but I think that there is a growing knowledge there's something seriously wrong. What encourages me is that there are a number of talk show programs that some of these people I know and know very well, that they are getting the information out, and they're getting it out by radio. What's interesting is so many of our major mainline newspapers are in real trouble. I mean, some of the old-line newspapers are simply shutting down, and people are not going to have their minds conditioned by those newspapers, so it's been deceiving them for so many years.
Yeah, that is such great news. The New York Times is even bigger trouble than we realized. And in fact, now they're actually going to start raising their prices for subscriptions and stuff. So here they are, they're already going down, and now they're going to raise their prices. So it's the same economic model they propose for the government. You know, in a recession, raise taxes. If your newspaper is going down the hill, then raise the price. I mean, they're trying their, you have to hand it to them, you know, they practice what they preach, but it's the beginning of the end for them, and we should be dancing on their grave, because that institution has done more to destroy this country than, I don't know, countless others put together.
Well, I think it has, and it's over a long period of time going, we look back 50 years, 75 years, how they were lying to the American people, and they're still lying to them today. But, you know, certainly more and more people are returning to the Internet. They're turning to talk radio, and suddenly listen to shortwave. People who never before really were that much interested in anything, but suddenly when they feel a threat, and ladies and gentlemen, this threat is not imaginary. It is very, very real. I mean, our enemy is not sitting in a cave over in Pakistan. Our enemy is not sitting in the Kremlin or in Beijing. Our enemies, I believe, are sitting right here in this country, and they are intent upon destroying the monetary foundation of this nation. And we cannot let that happen, or America as we know it will simply become a remembrance of things past. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Our guest, of course, is Thomas Woods, and of course his book is entitled Meltdown. And basically, how would you summarize the book, you know, for our listeners? And why should they want to buy it from Radio Liberty?
Well, first of all, to support you know, what I consider to be a great, a very important program that gets people a lot of information that they wouldn't be able to get anywhere else. So support you guys, definitely. But in terms of the book, well, it gives you, in not very many pages and in language that anybody can understand, it gives you an overview of how we got here, all the bogus predictions we got from all the so-called experts, and then what really happened and why this has to happen. It has to happen when the Fed does what it did under Alan Greenspan. And then what do we do to get out of it? And that includes talking about money, the type of money we have now, the type of money we would have to prevent this sort of thing from happening again, a really sound money. And then it just lays it out step by step, what needs to be done and what should not be done, namely fiscal stimulus and monetary stimulus that they're trying to do to us. They're the exact opposite of what needs to be done. So it gives you an arsenal of arguments so that no matter who it is you're up against, whether it's family, neighbor, anybody who gives you a hard time about your beliefs, you will have all the arguments you need to... This is not just a matter of scoring points against people. You'll be able to win the argument, but more than that, you might be able to win them over to your point of view, and I think that's urgently necessary right now. And the book, it's not because I'm some brilliant guy. I'm relying on the work of the great geniuses who came before me, who did all the heavy lifting. All I had to do was take their work and apply it to the present situation, and it fits like a glove. What Ludwig von Mises and F.A. Hayek taught years ago fits like a glove regarding what we're going through today.
And of course, von Mises was an advocate of the free market. In other words, keep government out of it. The market will regulate itself. You don't need government there. People will exchange goods, but you have to have a fixed currency. And this is the biggest problem that we have today. I mean, if you go back and you study what things were like under the gold-backed currency, why, we did not have over 100 years, you had essentially no inflation at all. You had a stable currency, and you knew what something was worth. And what's a house worth today? Well, whatever somebody will pay for it. But it either goes up or it goes down, depending on the business cycle, and it shouldn't be that. Things have to have inherent wealth and value, and these things don't have inherent value when you have a currency that they can simply expand massively, and then, of course, they can contract any time they want to. Well, I think that I'm just hoping and praying people will get your book. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful source of information they're not going to be able to get elsewhere. And is it still on the New York Times bestseller list?
I think we have just dropped off, but I would not be opposed to people wanting to put it back on there again.
All right, fine. Well, we would certainly agree that what we need to do is get the information out. Well, of course, our guest has been Professor Thomas Woods. Were you a professor at one time or just...
Yes, I was, and now I'm a full-time senior fellow at the Mises Institute.
All right, fine. We'll go ahead and we'll get one of our friends here. We'll take Chuck's call. Hi, Chuck. How are you doing?
Good, Dr. Stan. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Do you have a quick question for our guest?
Yes, and Thomas, God bless you both for what you're doing to really get the message out to all of us people that at least we know how to prepare and everything. But I think maybe some of the frustration might be that the idea is that what can we actually do to stop these people? They run amok, and it's great to have the preparation, but actually, you know, getting people into Congress and stuff, that's going to be too late. So just out of curiosity.
All right, you hold that question, and we'll get to that here since we get back from the break, Chuck.
Okay.
We'll be back in just a moment here. And what can we do? Well, I think the individual out there has to care. That's the first thing. They have to care enough to become involved. Well, how would you respond to Chuck? You did respond to part of that before, but that was during one of the breaks, so
yeah.
He did not hear what you had to say, so don't be afraid to repeat what you said.
Well, it's a tricky question because there may not really be a very good answer. I mean, there's certainly nothing I can do to stop Ben Bernanke from doing what he's going to do anyway, and there's nothing I can do to stop Barack Obama. So in one sense, it's very discouraging. But on the other hand, you know, we have seen major changes take place in our century because massive numbers of people just refuse to go along with the old system anymore. So the only approach I can see that can possibly work, and even this is a very much of a long shot, is just somehow to keep doing what we're doing, get this message out there to people who I think are increasingly skeptical of the official explanations they're being given. But I would also make an appeal to anybody of wealth who you know, let's say is nearing retirement and still has some wealth. Well, you know, I mean, you can't take it with you, and now your country needs you. If we could fund projects like a bigger media presence for our point of view. I mean, all kinds of things that you and I might have on our wish lists. Well, it's time now to step forward and try and fulfill these things and make them a reality. But all I can do, I mean, the way I think of it is this. I don't know ultimately how to fix this. I mean, I know what should be done, but I don't know how to get them to do it. So I think to myself, what can I as an individual do? The only thing I as an individual can do is think of what my talent is and then put it to the service of this. That's all I can do. And so one thing I'm good at is writing, and I do some public speaking, and I'm not bad at that either. But that's it. I mean, I'm terrible at anything else. I'm the worst at just about anything you could imagine. But I'm okay at these things. So the only thing I can say is that if every one of us can just think of that thing where we have some excellence or competence, where we can make a contribution, then we should all try to do that. That doesn't mean we're going to win necessarily, but we're going to die trying. We can at least say we did everything we could. And that may be small consolation, but it's not nothing either.
Well, I think we should pray as if it's up to God and work as if it's up to us, Chuck.
I always like that.
Well, amen. Philippians 4:13. I know that by the bottom of my heart.
But of course,
it's always going to be there for us. So God bless you both. Thank you so much.
God bless you. Thanks so much, Chuck.
Continue the good work.
Right. Chuck is certainly one of our supporters from down in the Salinas area, and we always enjoy having him give us a call. Well, our telephone number is... Well, we're not going to be able to take any more calls. We're out of time. Thomas, I want to thank you so very much for being willing to come on with us and of course, to share your wisdom and your point of view with us. I think it's so vitally important that people understand. Of course, if they get your book, maybe we can get it back on the New York Times bestseller list.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Sand. It's always a pleasure to be talking to you about these things.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, during the break there, while we were talking to Chuck from Salinas, and of course, certainly Thomas Wood, Professor Wood said, you know, you got to get in, you got to work, you got to try to get the information out, you got to do what you can do, and he, of course, can talk and he can write. Well, of course, each one of us can do something. We can talk to other people about what's going on. We can talk to them about the emblems on the back of the dollar bill. We can point out the fact that what we're using is Federal Reserve notes. What you can talk about is the fact that we have a small group of people who control both political parties. And if you go to my website and get the membership list on the Trilateral Commission, get the membership list to the Brotherhood of Darkness. You'll certainly want to get our latest newsletter, which is, of course, the March newsletter. It'll be out very, very shortly. And we simply show how a small group of people control totally our government. I mean, you're talking about three out of the four previous directors, chairman of the Federal Reserve, came to the Trilateral Commission. Every president and or vice president from 1976 up until the year 2008 just happened to be a member of the Trilateral Commission. There's only 87 members. How could that be? Every president and or vice president, either one or the other or both. You have to understand that they control the State Department. Right now, you know, there are at least four members of the Trilateral Commission in key positions on our State Department. They are the people who control the National Security Council, and of course, General James Jones recently said at the Munich Security Conference, he started out his speech, and you can get this up on the internet, just type in CFR, General James Jones, Munich Security Conference, February, or we'll send it to you if you want it. We've kept this. We think it's important. General James Jones said, I want to congratulate you for your tribute to Henry Kissinger yesterday. I want you to know that I take my orders every day from Henry Kissinger. And there we have a chain of command in the National Security Council, and I get my orders from General Brent Scowcroft and from Sandy Berger. Now, why is that important, ladies and gentlemen? Why? Henry Kissinger was the advisor to George Bush. He was the non-official advisor to George Bush. If you read Bob Woodward's books on Bush, he will tell you. I mean, every time Bush came to Washington, D.C., they stopped everything, and he came and told the president what to do. And Henry Kissinger was a founding member of the Trilateral Commission, a permanent member of the Bilderbergers, on the board of the Council on Foreign Relations. He certainly has been working for the Rockefellers for years, and the Rockefeller, David Rockefeller, openly admits in his memoirs that, you know, some people think that I and my family are part of a secret cabal that's involved in conspiring against the best interests of the United States to bring about a new international order. And if that is the charge, I'm guilty. And I'm proud of it. That's what he says, page 405. You can get his David Rockefeller's memoirs from Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. If you want that quotation from General James Jones, we have it. You get anything from us, you can get a free copy of that. We'll have it for you. Get it off the Internet if you want to. Understand that nothing is as it appears to be. You need to get certainly the book by Thomas Wood. It's an excellent book. We think it's really did a great job with this, and we do have copies. Even though when we contacted the publisher, they told us it was out of print. It really wasn't. I wonder why they told us it was out of print. We run into that lots of times when you have a really good book out there. And then, of course, you want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You want to get my newsletters in November and December of last year and January, February of this year. They're at RadioLiberty.com. If you want to know why we're going to war with Pakistan, read my January 2008 newsletter, January 2008, called State Secrets. It's about, of course, how we've been transferring nuclear technology to Pakistan, but we can't let the common people know that. And then, of course, if you haven't got the Secret Mystery DVDs, you need to get those, the three of them, and they're all three at a special rate of $59.95. You get them individually for $24.95.